This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey with us today. How are you this morning?
Doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. It actually feels a lot better out there this morning when compared to last couple of weeks, really.
Most definitely. It's 10 degrees makes a big difference.
It really does. Do y'all get more calls when it's hotter or when it's cooler?
Well, we have when it's really hot, like it has been last week or so, we get a lot of heat exhaustion calls, people working outside. That kind of goes up, but as far as the normal calls, no, not really.
I would bet the heat exhaustion stuff, man, if you're working out in the yard or something, heat hits you a lot quicker than what you think.
Yes, it does. I was myself last weekend, I worked out in the yard and I did just a little bit and it's like, oh man, I can't go any longer. But this weekend I was able to do everything I wanted to do and the heat was not a factor.
There was actually a nice breeze even.
Yes. Which feels really good.
Unusual. It does kind of scare me a little bit about August. You know, August is usually the hottest month. So far, though, we're not starting out that way, so I wonder what's going to happen next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I did see on the news that July broke some records for hottest month in a long time.
I bet it did. Yeah, our heat index was like up to 110 some days.
Yes, it was.
That's no fun.
Not at all, especially if you have to fight a fire in it.
Yeah, I would say so. Have there been a lot of fires lately?
Not a whole lot to really mention, but we have had a few. None really significant, but you still, you know, in this kind of weather, we have to watch our men and women, you know, the ones that are inside the fire, make sure that they go through rehab and take short breaks after the short times in the fire.
How hot does it actually get when you're wearing all that gear and everything and fighting a fire? How hot does it get?
Well, you know, it gets very hot. I don't know what your internal temperature would be, but, you know, you got to imagine just putting on a winter coat out in the middle of the summer, then going inside of a fire. Which the fire could be anywhere from 5 to, you know, up to 1,000 degrees inside.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, it'll take it out of you quick. There's been studies shown that a firefighter fighting fire actually in his gear or her gear will use as much energy in the 30 minutes of fighting fire that most workers use in an 8-hour day.
Wow. And then they may have to go back out 2 hours later for another fire.
That's true. That's the reason, you know, we try to stay in good physical shape. It's athletic job, basically.
Yeah, it's, I guess, like playing sports 24/7 almost.
Exactly.
Now, y'all rolled out a new fitness program recently to kind of help with some of that.
Yes, this was a grant we received. We're the second department in the nation has actually gotten it so far. I think Denver was the first, and we're the second. It's a program that was federally funded, 80-20 split with the city, I believe is what the numbers were, 90-10-1, I can't remember. We bought all new workout equipment for every station. They're all the same, consistent with each other. We have a physical therapist we can go to. We have a nutritionist coach that's come in and taught us how to cook certain meals and stuff and put it in. We're on a workout program. We have had some of our members of our department actually go take training, so we're all doing the same training program.
Like Nautilus equipment, free weights, what
yeah, all of it. All of it. It's like a small gym. It's kind of based on what kind of workout we're going to be doing and what you really need. It's not like going to one of your basic gyms here in town, but we have pretty much everything you need.
Well, that's cool. That's mm-hmm. a good idea to have. Do other fire states, like in Nashville, do they have stuff like that in their fire halls?
Well, they were kind of like we were in the past. You know, the city may buy a few weights. People bring in their own, and they have a different types of gyms set up in each station, whatever the personnel wanted. And we had that. You know, we got some people that are more in cardio. We had treadmills and stair climbers and stuff like that. And we got some that's more into weights. So this new system we got incorporates that all together in the workout plan that we have for our firefighters go with this set of weights that we got.
And kind of walk us through each firehouse. I mean, you go in, you got, I guess, your little office area and all that. But when the firemen, I don't know if there's a certain time they're supposed to go to bed or how all of that works, but is there a room for each fireman? Is it a big room with a bunch of beds in it? What does that look like?
Well, some of the stations, our older stations, are mainly a big room with a bunch of beds in it. Some have partition walls in between them. And the newer are going to where they are partitioned and have more of a just a bedroom. But that brings, we have a new station about to start construction down here in the next year or so. We're looking to hope that we can get individual bedrooms that will give each individual a better sleeping pattern, because that sleeping also comes in with this physical fitness. You know, there's studies showing how firemen sleep in their station, how it's not good by being in an open room, by hearing other noises and the way the alarm affects them and all.
You know, there's more and more studies out there that talk about how important sleep really is for us.
And, it is.
And that makes sense then.
It does.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as the meals and everything, you said that they, like a professional...
Yeah, we've had our nutritionist coach come in, teach us certain kind of meals that are good for you, you know, to watch your calories or you know, low fat and stuff like that. Just a good, healthy meal for that type of lifestyle, like a... almost like an athlete meal.
So do they cook every single meal there, or do people bring stuff from home?
Well, each station works different. Like, used to when I was at Station 1, I cooked for about 12, 14 people every shift for about 8 years. I was the cook there for a while. Some stations rotate their whoever's going to cook at night, or, you know, just different ways. But the majority of them, they do cook together.
It seems like that'd be a better idea anyway. I mean,
it is. It's cheaper, usually a better meal, depending on the cook.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you're a pretty good cook, you'll find yourself another job within the department there, you know, cooking. And sometimes it gets aggravating. I used to tell them always I'd cook and serve it late. That way they was all pretty hungry, so it was pretty good all the time.
That's good. We heard an interesting story. I believe it was out of Hendersonville this past week or the past weekend, and a baby was dropped off at one of those baby drop-off box locations in Hendersonville. And I know Murfreesboro has one of those here. In fact, I think we were the 11th fire hall to actually have one installed, but... kind of bring us up to date on those, and how many do we have in Murfreesboro, and what are they called exactly?
It's a safety drop. I'm trying to think what the exact name. Baby box is what we call it. But it's a safe place for someone that is having a baby that, for whatever reason, there is no kind of names attached to this if you don't want to. You know, the state laws protect you for doing this. If you have a baby and you just don't want the baby, you're able to drop it off in this box. So when you do drop it off, there's some information to share with the mother, or if it, you know, whoever's dropping the box off, what you can do, all the legal aspects of it. And once the baby is put into the box, it's a controlled atmosphere, you know, the temperature and all. It notifies us with an alarm. Of course, we can go to the box and take the baby, and if it needs any medical care or any of that, then we carry it to the ER.
You know, it's wild where we are today as a society. I know years and years ago, like in the 20s, there would be newspaper articles about a baby that was abandoned on the front steps of a police station or a fire hall or a hospital.
Yes. Yeah, back then, that was type of places they knew if they dropped a baby off, it would get some kind of care or maybe even a home. You know, didn't you say in the 1920s and 30s, hearing all those kind of stories like that? Not too many years ago, I remember a story in particular, a girl, I think she had twins, and ended up actually killing the babies. If this alternative had been there, these babies could have had them, hopefully been adopted and have been living today, and herself would not be serving life in prison.
You know, it's sad. You hear stories nationwide about how a mother, a father killed newborn babies, you know, and this would be, this is an alternative, obviously.
Yes.
Safe alternative to that.
Yeah, it's an alternative. It's sad that it would happen, but it makes you happy that it is there.
You know, it's crazy because I never thought we would have something like that in
yes.
America, in Murfreesboro or Hendersonville, anywhere.
Yeah, the safe haven boxes, you know, they're getting popular. They're everywhere. A fire station usually makes the best place to put one. Usually you have trained EMT or paramedics there when the alarm does go off. Luckily, our station is, you know, right there next to the emergency room or hospital here in town. We have not had one dropped off in our box as far as up to today.
Not one dropped off here, no. but again, one in, I guess, Hendersonville recently, which is, to me, it's always surprising when you hear about those stories.
It is. There has been a few across the state here in Tennessee. And like I said, it's heartbreaking to know that you have that box, but it's good to know that it is there.
Yeah, it is definitely... I mean, it's so much better than what could have happened.
Exactly, exactly.
And then I'm not sure, I don't know what does happen after that baby is dropped off, taken to the hospital, checked out. What does happen? Does it go into the foster care system? What occurs?
I'm not sure exactly what system it gets into, but we do know that it's, like I said, it goes to the emergency rooms, taken care of that. I think maybe DHS gets involved on that, and... then they find a home. It goes into the adoption system where it can find a home.
And the one in Murfreesboro is on Medical Center Parkway. That's the fire station closest to the hospital.
Yes, that's Station 4 on Medical Center Parkway. It's in a location in front of the building where you can pull in and guest park in. You know, there's no cameras out there. You know, it's very private where you can do this at. It's lit up, obviously, you know, for someone coming in if during the night, but we're not videotaping or anything where we do on other sides of the building, so it's anonymous to do it. But you know, you have the option when you open the box to give the information. Hopefully you do get that information, because it gives some background on the baby, where it may come from. Not that they're going to come looking for you saying, oh, you're a bad person for dropping your baby off, but also if you do, like I said, I think you have up to 14 days, don't quote me on that, to come back and pick the baby back up, you know, if you thought you might have made a bad decision by dropping it off or something like that.
Now, when you hear about stories like this across the nation, are there usually, or is it usually from a situation where the mom is addicted to drugs, or is it something where there's a domestic violence and the mom's literally trying to save the baby from that?
Well, you know, I have not had any personal experience, but just hearing the stories from it, a lot of times it is because of drug use. It's a younger mother that does not want the responsibility of the newborn. And a lot of times that's when drugs is involved. You know, like I said, whatever the reason, I really don't know what reasons people do drop them off for, but sometimes I do find out it seems like drugs are involved in that.
Hey, I'm always surprised to hear about these stories where a teenager didn't know she was pregnant. Then she finds out, you know, at the last minute she is pregnant, doesn't tell a parent or anything. But do y'all get calls sometimes where you respond and there's a teenage girl there and she tells you that she's pregnant, but yet mom and dad don't even realize it?
You know, we've had situations to where the medical call, you'd have to ask that question, is there a possibility you're pregnant? You know, I myself have never come across it to where I've had a medical call and the parents find out or something like that, or she tells us and that was the first person she's told.
There's a lot of hostility in the world today, and there's a lot of domestic violence, and I'm sure you guys sometimes respond to right in the middle of the domestic violence call.
We do. We have several domestic violence calls that we go on for the medical reasons, and you know, maybe some type of abuse or something like that. Normally, of course, our dispatchers, when they're screening the call, if they think something's going on as far as a physical fight or something like that, they'll put us in staging until PD gets there. But we do see it.
As seasons change, is there an average call that you see during the wintertime than an average call you see during the summertime and so forth? Or is that just constantly changing too?
It's pretty consistent year-round. You do have, like in the wintertime, you'll have your... heating fires, you know, someone doing something with the heater or what type of heating they're using that you don't have as many in the summer, if any. You know, in the summertime, like we were talking a minute ago, the heat exhaustions, those calls go up. Summertime grass fires, what, you know, a little bit of land we have left here in the city that has like sage fields in it, that's, we'll have those type of calls in the summer.
I know a number of months ago we were talking about drug overdose calls, and where do we stand now with drug overdoses, and are you still seeing a high number of them?
We still see them. I mean, that's an everyday call we have. The runs on that total runs, I think they stay pretty consistent all the time. I do know sometimes when you have a bad batch come through town, we'll have more in a week's time than you normally do. Here lately, I don't know of any that's come through. So it's still pretty consistent, 3 or 4 or 5 a day, something like that.
And usually those bad batches is when fentanyl is added to the mix.
Yes, fentanyl is added to try to, you know, make the drug stronger or whatnot.
And then
the person may get, you know, be used to whatever kind of drug he's taking, doing this to him, and the next time he uses the same dose and it has fentanyl in it and it's too much for him.
Of course, a lot of people are buying fake, what they think are just regular pain pills. Turns out they're made with fentanyl.
Yes.
By who knows who.
Yes.
Now, Narcan, does that treat, you know, drugs that are made with fentanyl just the same as it treats just the basic opioids?
It does. You know, that's what it does. It works on opioids. And that's an amazing drug when you can walk in on someone that's overdosed and they're sitting there or laying there with no pulse or heartbeat. Give them the Narcan, and 5 minutes later, they're talking to you.
And you've seen this firsthand. I mean, this really happens.
Yes, it does. I've actually seen patients, you know, unresponsive, like I said, no heartbeat, no pulse. Narcan them. 5 minutes later, they're walking down the steps to come to the ambulance.
That's crazy.
It is.
So when you look at these drug calls, I guess you would have to have every single fire truck equipped with Narcan, sounds like.
It is. It's in all of our medical bags. You know, in some of our vehicles that we drive around, they're not necessarily fire trucks. They have medical bags in them, too. Yeah, Narcan's a must-have in every medical bag.
Now, I know Nashville was going to try something new, kind of like the defibrillators you see hanging on the wall, like in the airport as an example. But they were going to try something along those lines, but with Narcan being publicly available like that. Did that ever...
You know, I heard something about that, but I've never have followed up on it, see if they're actually doing it. You know, I do know some health departments were handing it out. Also, it's the drug itself, you're not really going to harm somebody with the dose they're giving you. You know, it's like if you do give it to somebody and they're not overdosed, you're not going to hurt them. But if they are, it will work.
And it's pretty easy to actually administer from what I've read, right?
It is. You know, there's different ways, but the most common way of doing it is just a nasal spray. Kind of like using the stuff you spray up your nose, you know, for allergies and stuff, you just squirt it in your nose.
That's wild. It's amazing that it reverses those effects of that opioid overdose so quickly.
It is. You know, it's used to before we used that much Narcan, we'd use another drug called D50 that was for diabetics, and their sugar would be, you know, real low to where they're basically unresponsive. You get them a shot of D50 and they just come back to normal. You know, it gets their blood sugar up. It kind of works like that. It's amazing what some drugs can do. You know, all drugs are not bad. You know, most if you use them in the wrong ways when they're bad.
Do you have some drug users who, you know, you administer Narcan on them, they come back and they're mad at you for interrupting whatever high they thought they had?
You do. They're usually in a daze, you know. That is part of it sometimes, you know, because I guess in the mental state that they're in, they don't realize that they are about to die or were dead. We kill their buzz, basically, if you want to say that.
Killers there.
But yes. And I have also seen this where you work an overdose. They go to the hospital. Most of the times they don't want to go, but you need to get them to go. But they'll go to the hospital, then work another overdose, and they still have their hospital bands on their arm. Wow. Where they got out that day. So it's a problem with several people.
And a lot of these folks, they end up turning, I guess, to heroin when they can no longer find whatever drug it was they used to purchase, and then that's when that heroin addiction starts.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know where they start and how they get where they're at, but it's seems like that's a lot of that being used.
Now, the cool thing is that sometimes you guys have patients who were in the middle of, maybe it was an auto accident, maybe it was a heroin overdose, but you have sometimes patients who come back to you, come back to the fire station, and they say thank you. They sometimes say, you turned my life around.
Yeah, we have had that, and it's one of those good moments, you know, when you feel like that you have made a difference in somebody's life, you know. A few on the drugs, you know, and especially, you know, cardiac arrest, you know, not related to drug overdose or anything like that. But when you save somebody's life and they realize it, yeah, it's nice to have those people come back. It's a pretty good connection there. It makes the firemen feel really good, and it's good for the people a lot of times to talk to the person that was actually doing it.
Now, off the air, we were talking a little bit about the possibility of a brand new fire station. And right now, how many fire stations do we have in Murfreesboro?
Right now, we have 11 different stations. And we're looking at construction of a new one out on Veterans Parkway, close to 840 in that area. We already have some money in budget to start doing some of the infrastructure things for survey and how much work needs to be done on the lot, working with the architect and people like that to get to the point ready to break ground.
So this new fire station would be number 12.
This would.
And if everything goes as planned, when would they start construction? When would it be open for actually having, you know, fire trucks and everything?
You know, it takes a little while to do this, but we're looking, it would be at least 2 years before you could say the possibility of having it open. We had a meeting, it's been about 2 weeks ago. And Sam Huddleston was heading it up. Of course, he retired, you know, this past Friday. We're going to miss Sam. He was a big part in these construction jobs like this. But out of that meeting with what we figured out, we're hoping maybe to have it go out for bids in February for the construction.
And so this would be kind of within the brand new Veterans Park, which is out there near I-840.
Correct.
Be on, the corner side of that property.
Yes, you know, the city owns, I believe it's a total of 125 acres that Parks and Rec are building the Veterans Park. Down in that corner of that lot next to Liberty Bank, where the Blackman Road used to come, we would be like their next door neighbor there.
And if everything does go as planned, is the fire hall going to look similar to the fire halls we already have?
Yes, it's cheaper for us if we have a plan to reuse that plan. We don't have all the architect fees that goes into the redesigning a new building, but we have the plans that we used on Station 11. We will do a few cosmetic changes, maybe some of the changes inside on the walls after building that station and the men and women using it and finding out things, hey, this may have worked better. You know, if we did it this way, we'll look at all that and change a few things inside the building.
Again, Fire Chief Mark McCleskey with us today. We are going to take a short break, and then we will be right back.
What I like to think about Adams Place is it's sort of a pipeline.
Alan Butcher.
You enter in at the independent living end of it, and you go as far as you can. It just happens that my wife is in the memory unit, so I'm able to go over and see her each day, and that works out real well.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
Middle Tennessee Electric's virtual annual meeting is Saturday, August 16th at 2 p.m. Register to be entered for prizes, submit questions, and vote for officers starting August 9th at MTE or by phone. More information at mte.com/annual meeting.
Holden Hardware now has an e-commerce site. Go to doitbest.com/Holden-hardware and shop all the items in our warehouse. You can have them shipped directly to you, or most items can be shipped for free to Holden Hardware for pickup. Shop with us in person or go online to doitbest.com/Holden-hardware.
One more time.
doitbest.com/Holden-hardware.
Think the customers know I raise these eggs myself?
They do now. That hen's been louder than your radio.
50 years of local flavor. The Farmer's Market, Tuesday and Friday, 7 to 1.
Only at a producer-only market can you meet the hens behind the eggs.
Lane Agri Park in Murfreesboro.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. Demas's has had a bar when we opened 35 years ago. And we've done the exact same thing with our bar menu that we've done with our food menu. We get higher quality items, higher quality cocktails. And some people just want a drink with their meal, where they might be able to get a drink to complement their meals. You need to check it out, so come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street. We really focus on value.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Murfreesboro Fire Chief Mark McCleskey in studio with us this morning and talking about just different things within the fire department. Now, I know the police department is hiring right now. How do we look as far as the number of employees for the fire department?
Right now, we are down about, it's either five or six. We've had really good luck with retention here in the last year. These positions here are from people retiring and stuff. So we just put out this week, we're opening up applications for a couple of weeks, try to get these positions filled. And then also, as we mentioned, the new fire station, which if that passes in CIP, which it looks like it probably will, we'll have to hire for that station starting next year also too, because that'll be 15 new positions to open that station.
So when you do hire, are you looking for folks who are already firemen, already trained from other areas, or do you go through a huge training process?
Well, we do it both ways. Actually, on these five or six we're hiring this time, we're going to look at some laterals and see if we can maybe get those, because we don't have enough positions to put on a rookie school, which is very costly to the city to put on a school. We need close to 20 people to put on a rookie school to be efficient as far as cost. And also, in that class of 20, we'll get some of our neighboring departments that may have new people, like we have Hendersonville, Smyrna, Laverne have come in. I said Smyrna, mainly Laverne. They may have four or five, and they'll help with teaching the class, so it makes it more cost effective for us and them. This year, with all the retention we've had actually put off having a rookie class until next year, because we don't need the positions right now. So we're doing really good on retention right now.
A lot of fire departments in the state, they're making sure that their firemen are trained, I guess some type of EMT training in addition to just the traditional fire training. Is that something you're looking for incoming firemen when you hire them?
Yes. If it's a lateral position, that would be considered as a lateral. Already have your state firefighter too, already trained up to an EMT advanced, and have your fire training also.
And of course, I guess that means higher pay as well if you
yes,
have those.
If you have those certifications, you move up in the pay range.
And then other things that you do look for, I know, you know, some firemen, they're certified to drive the truck. Some are not. Are those also things that stand out to you?
We don't do any hiring far as bringing somebody in as a driver or a captain. We promote to those positions. But if someone comes in with that, we verify it, make sure. We put them through our training, a couple of weeks of training, so many hours of driving and actually pumping. Then we could move them up to a relief driver, which that actually bumps their pay up a little bit. Then they can fill in when their normal driver is off. And that is required to have if you ever want to promote to the driver's position.
And here in Murfreesboro, the pay scale, if you're a city firefighter, I mean, it starts off pretty good compared to a lot of other departments across the state.
It is. We're very, very competitive. This is the first time that we have put out for hiring since our pay has been adjusted and made competitive. We're really wanting to see what kind of people do put in, because, in the last two or three years, we have lost so many people until we made these adjustments. And they were going to departments that were paying more. Now we're in that position. We want to see what kind of people we attract now.
And then the hours on the job versus your time off. How does Murfreesboro do it? Is it like 2 days on, then 2 days off? What do they do here?
We work one day and off two.
Okay, so 1 day on, two
yes,
days off.
That's correct. And like today's shift is Monday. They come in, they'll get off in the morning at 7, and they don't have to be back until Thursday morning at 7.
And then if a fireman is working, you know, filling in a shift for somebody else, is that the point where they could be working, I guess, 48 hours on?
That is correct. If they're maybe do a duty exchange with someone and they have to work their shift and their whoever they exchanged with, sometimes we do have overtime. You know, if we got a big class going on, that has dropped down quite a bit here lately. We've been fully staffed for the last year. But there are times to work overtime and do duty exchanges.
What do you find as being, I guess, the most popular shift version? I mean, is it that one day on, 2 days off? What is it?
Well, you know, some other departments have changed that, how they're working. They're working 48 on, 96 off, and stuff like that. And some love it. Seems like the younger people like the 48-hour shift and being off 96. I actually did a survey just to feel with the people out, see what they might would want to change to if we were able to change. And you come back, everybody, the majority wanted to keep on the 24-48. And I had some remarks from some of the older people, you know, like 24 hours here is enough for me. I can't do 48. And you look at some of these departments doing 48-hour shifts, they're not as busy as us. You know, we got half of our stations. If you work the 48 hours, you're not going to get any sleep in that 48 hours time with the amount of calls that we make.
You know, I can imagine that, because once you get that first call, and let's say it's a midnight call, chances are good you're probably going to get another one within an hour or so.
Yes.
Especially if you're in the city limits.
You're exactly right. We got, you know, about half of our stations, you're pretty much guaranteed to be up at night all the time. And also, that 48-96 shift, there has been some research done on that, too. In your busier cities where they're actually up those 48 hours working, their patient care drops off in that last 48 hours, and that's an issue, too, they've looked at.
I can see where that would be a problem.
Yes.
Now, in Murfreesboro, do you guys work, you know, in addition to just all the regular city streets and neighborhoods, do you also respond to the interstate in Murfreesboro, like I-24?
Yeah, we do cover the interstate. The interstate is in the city, pretty much annexed from 840 all the way to Joe B. Jackson. So we cover all that and part of 840. There's about a five-mile stretch of 840 we cover.
Now, are there some areas where you will call in, I guess, backup, maybe call in the county or someone along those lines?
We have an interlocal agreement. You know, if they need help, we can help them. They call on us, and vice versa. You know, if we have something, we need some help.
Now, in the past, we talked about how long it takes these days in order to get a new fire truck. And with this new fire station on the horizon, at what point will you have to go ahead and order fire trucks for that fire station?
Well, it's right now, basically. We got to get to working on that and order one, because it's anywhere from 2 to 3 years. Depending on what you're ordering, it's some of the companies now have just a basic fire truck they build. They're not custom built to what you want exactly. You can get those a little quicker, but if you custom build it, it's taken at least 2 years.
And are most of the fire trucks you order today, are they more so custom built?
Yes, custom.
What are things that we have here that maybe other departments don't have?
Well, you know, most of your trucks are custom. They order them custom, and it's not really they have anything different. It's how it's placed on the truck. You may, some cities may want their medical bags on the side of the truck. We may want ours on the inside of the truck. Every how we lay it out, we want a big compartment here because this is where we want our generators. We're at another department down. So you just kind of custom like that. And also maybe what kind of hose you want, type of ladders you want, the size of the pump, the engine and the actual motor, the engine in the vehicle, what size and stuff like that.
Is some of that more so for continuity? Like if you have a fireman who may be filling in for somebody at another fire station, at least the truck's going to be about the same layout.
Yes, we try to keep everything laid out the same. There's certain pieces of equipment when you go to our stations, it's going to be in the same place on every truck. That way, when someone, you know, like you said, is working an extra shift and they go to a different station, when they get off that truck, they pretty well know where the equipment's at.
Now, in downtown Murfreesboro, it looks like there are preliminary plans in place for another 15 or so story building. And that being said, there's probably going to be more on the horizon for Murfreesboro. Are we going to have a need for trucks that can, you know, I guess, better handle these taller buildings in the near future?
We are. I'm looking right now at some different types of trucks. You can only go so high with what they build today. But the thing about it is your truck can only be so big where it fit in the station. So you got to look at different type of trucks about the length of them to have the maximum amount of reach. Then if you get too long a truck, it's harder to get around in the downtown areas. So that's something we got to look at. I know there's a development going on, I think, over around Walnut Street in the downtown area, and it's basically going to be a 5-story building that covers the whole block with parking on around the outside, like street curb parking and parking garage. It's going to be tough to get around that building if you have something on the fifth floor. And when I say it's tough to get around, of course, it'll meet fire codes. Having a truck that you can bring into that small block area and get it set up to reach the top of that building.
And then the parking garages, I mean, that's another obstacle, I'd say, for the majority of fire trucks in general.
It can be. Of course, a fire truck's not going to go in a parking garage. Luckily, our parking garages around here are fairly new construction compared to some bigger cities. They have standpipes inside of them where we can sit outside and pump the water through the standpipe system to a hose that we carry inside.
In Nashville downtown, you've got some parking garages 6-7 stories tall, and
yes,
they're small. I mean, the entrances and everything, it's just tight to begin with.
It is. They're designed for vehicles. 6.5 foot tall, maybe maximum. You know, of course, our fire trucks are way on up on that as far as height. But yeah, Metro just had a fire in their garage. It burned up several of their city vehicles down there.
Well, as we close out, because I know we only have about a minute or so left, what are we averaging right now on monthly calls?
Roughly about 2,000 calls a month. And what's what we're going on.
And that's a mixture of everything from fires to auto accidents to, you know, medical needs.
That's a total runs. It, you know, 2,000 one month, we may have 2,200, next month 1,900. So 2,000 a month is a good round number of an average of what we're having.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, yes.
Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Chief Mark McCleskey with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Our prices will normally meet internet prices. When I buy a guitar, I have to put my hands on the guitar neck. You can do that here. You can try your instrument before you ever put any money on it at all. And still, cheaper than what you could get online most of the time. At least match their prices at worst. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
I am Charlotte Gardner. I've lived at Adam's Place for 3 years. After my husband died, I didn't want to cook for one anymore. Everything just got too tedious.
How long did you look around?
I did not look around. I did not even consider any place else.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adam's Place. Call me for more information about Adam's Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adam's Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.